Okay. So we stop? Wait, what's your call? That. Okay, good. So he's the Rambam here is discussing what are the different elements of the Gemara, the purpose of the Gemara to the Mishnah. So three of them are so have to do with the halachic aspect of the Mishnah. Explaining the Mishnah, clarifying the halacha is like whom. So first of all, clarifying pshat the Mishnah, deciding halachas, and working out new questions in light of the Mishnah. Those three are fairly simple, straightforward. And then there's a fourth part, which is called Agadata, which sort of leaves us a bit bewildered. So it says like this: V'zein yerevi v'tzani loyma hadrosh hanimtza b'talmud. Now, if it's always the Agadata in the Gemara has always been kicked about as being something which is strange, weird, unusual in many ways, and when people wanted to sort of denigrate the Gemara, they always start with the Agadatas. And they say that, you know, the Agadatas are the is sort of the Achilles heel. The Maral has a whole sefer on it called Be'er Hagola, which he goes through. I believe it's six or seven main issues that people have with Agadata, and he picks the most blatant example of it, and he goes and he answers it very, very powerfully. He doesn't answer it. He goes through each one as a chapter, big chapter, where he explains these agaritas. One is the extraordinary, what seems convoluted drushes that we have in the psukim, how we dash on something. Things about signs that seem to be out of whack, even in his days. Things about God that seem to be very, very anthropomorphic. Things about behaving towards other nations. Or each one of these, the Maral treats as a separate issue that people have with Agadata, and he answers it and so on. So Agadata was always the realm of when people wanted to start unraveling the validity of Torah Sheba'al Peh, they would always start with Agadata. And then Rambam is going to give his understanding of it. V'zein yerevi ritzoni lomar hadrosh hanimtza b'talmud ein rol lachshov shemaloso nemucha v'talto ma'ata. Don't think that the Agadata is not an important work, and both in terms of what the work is and how important it is for your own life. Elu tachlis gedola has a tremendous tachlis to it. L'mashe kolbo min achidos haniflos achamudos haployos. Either despite the fact, the word lema that he's translating here, I would say means despite the fact that there seem to be these riddles that seem to really arouse all sorts of questions. Maybe also means this phrase to mean positive, but at the end of the day, the Agadata has awful lot to offer. Lefisha oisen hadrashas, those drashas, im ya'ayin ben in panimi, if you take a look at the inner, if you get a sense of what the message is, yuvan mehen minatova gomash el malo, you will understand things that there are no ideas more profound. You'll discover divine secrets. That which the wise people did not want to just reveal. And things that philosophers spend generations trying to understand it. Now, the Rambam and most, the Maral also, they all agree on the following point, that the Agadata is written in, it's written in a form, in a certain format. The message is not the surface meaning of those words and terms, but rather something deeper behind it. Let's just take something, just fish out something. It says that Avraham Avinu had a necklace around his neck that anyone who saw it would get healed. Now, let's assume, even if that would be factually correct, it doesn't really tell us much. It's the significance of that information is close to zero, and the klal is that Chachamim spoke in what's the right word for it, in metaphor. The Mishlei, Shlomo HaMelech says Divrei Chachamim v'chidosam, the words of the wise people, and the word chidos is translated as riddles. Except that the word riddles means, I guess the common usage in English is a little game that somebody constructs to amuse people. That's not, it doesn't mean, it means that they constructed riddles sort of for amusement. It means they spoke in a veiled, hidden way where you had to fish out what it means. So almost all the Mefarshim are on board with the understanding that Agarata is not to be understood literally, but it needs to be studied, and you need to coax the meaning out of it. This is true with the Rambam, and it's true of the Maral, and it's certainly true of the Bali Kabbalah, and true of many more. The reason behind it is that the message that they wanted to give over was not a message that they wanted normal people just to fish out. They wanted only people who would break their heads and understand it to go for it. So that's what they did. Now, this understanding of Agarata is actually locked into the Mishnah itself. The Mishnah says that you don't darshan Maaser Merkava, which is some hidden esoteric knowledge that we're not sure what that is, but we assume it's Kabbalah. But it says Ein Darshin even le'echad, ella le'mi. You don't even teach it to one person, but you give over Rashi Prakim to a person that can understand what you meant from just having the Rashi Prakim, the headings, the headlines, and so on. In other words, the Mishnah clearly tells you there is a world of chachma in Klal Yisrael's Torah that it is not appropriate to publicize it flat, you know, as it is in a literal way. It's appropriate only to publicize it in a way that will automatically filter out the people that are not supposed to have it. So you're supposed to, so you give it in a way that unless you break your head to figure it out, you're just not going to figure it out, and you'll just, you know, pass it by and go on further. Let's see how the Ram describes it. So the Ram says they did not want to reveal it. Vim tabit by kipshuto, if you look at Agaritas, the way they read on a surface level, a literal meaning, tirabo me'arichuk menaseich ma'shemana, you will find things that seemed as far-fetched as can be. The omnum osuzel inyonim lefloyim, there are they did this for a reason. It's deliberately couched in such language. Why? Echad mehem lehafros rayoni halomdim, one of them is to further fertilize the minds of the people that learn it. Let's talk about this. The when I tell you something straight out, you have a bit of information. That's that. When I give it to you veiled in some sort of meaning, so besides the mental effort you need to extract it from that veiled meaning, it also carries itself all sorts of nuances and understandings that you don't get from straight out. If I can give it a simple mushel, if somebody, certain things, if you give it in prose or you give it in poetry, so if you say in prose, so-and-so died, he was young and everybody was heartbroken, that's X amount of information. When you put it in a poetic form, with all sort, you enclose, when the person has to tease out of the poetry, the things, a lot more is to be found in it. In other words, it's enriching to the mind of the wise person who understands it via metaphor as opposed to flat prose. That's one. And the second one is, they did not want the shallow people, the stupid people, to know it, because he says, amitos, if we would teach them the real deal, they would go away from it because they're missing something. Now, in other words, since Agarita deals with very, very fine matters, refined matters, there are people that are coarse and they don't get it. So if you tell them this is unknown material and they have a story, but the story is not the content, so fine. But if you were to reveal to them, if you were to state it out in flat language, they would understand it in a flat way, and therefore, and that would be corrupting. For instance, much of the Zohar and Kabbalah speaks of God's interactions with the world in physical terms. Right, left, the hand, 5, 10, this, that. These are all things that don't mean anything per se when you talk about Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's no right, there's no left, there's no up, there's no down. There's no one sphere, there's no 10 spheres. But for us, we draw powerful analogies from all of these elements of description. But if a shallow person were just to be fed it as it is, he would say, yes, I learned that God is this, God is that, he's up, he's down, he's right, he's left, and this and that and the other thing. And the person would be a mini Apicurus. It's things that are delicate ideas, putting them out on the table so that a coarse person can take it and just just repeat it. It would be very bad. So Chazal put all of these deeper things into a very veiled metaphoric language, which allows for the bright mind to chew on it and come up with the gems that are inside it, and the more shallow mind to not notice these gems and to be perfectly happy without it. And therefore not to run into the problems of the shallow person downgrading, dumbing down the information. Even Chazal would not be overly eager to teach people some madrega of chachma that they were on that the other people were not yet. In other words, they were weary of teaching it. Of course, Sipru, ki ish min hachachomim ischaba l'anashim shebikim b'chachma zebreishis. It's a Gemara in Chagiga that somebody who knew Merkava, which is on a higher madrega of Maisa Breishis. He told him, "Lamduni Maaser Breishis, teach us Maaser Breishis, v'lamedch Maaser Kavah, teach Maaser Kavah." V'ne'enu loy, and they agreed. Because they do Maaser Breishis, once they taught Maaser Breishis, nimna v'lamdu Maaser Kavah. Well, he didn't. He refused to teach them. He didn't keep his end of the bargain. Why? Losa ze cholu lekel etzaris ayin mita b'chachma. It's not that he didn't want them to know, or certainly as the Ma'alim, he didn't want to be like, okay, I'm ahead of the game because I know both, and you don't know only this. Because that's a type of midah that would be course, even for a simple person, a person who doesn't want to help somebody else in study would not count. That's only big people. The reason he did it was because he honestly felt that he was able to learn what they had to offer, but not the other way around. So basically he said, I am able to learn my sabbatius, so you've got to teach my sabbatius. I don't think, or maybe as if after listening to you, I don't think you're up yet to my summer cover, and that's why I didn't teach it to him. If I can give a general clout as to what the problem with teaching this stuff is. If you take a look at Rabbeinu Bechai, also speaks about the Torah. It says it's nevuv luchos. It goes through and through. There's a hidden part. There's an outside part. He says like this, and it's all the same, really. The language, we're caught in a bind. In order to say something meaningful about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's interaction with the Bria, I need to use meaningful terminology. Meaningful terminology is quantified. It tells me how much, when, how, what, and what not. Those are all questions that are answered in the process of identifying something. To talk about something that I can't do that to, but I can just talk about it, is kind of very, very strange. Just doesn't mean anything. So here also, we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To say something meaningful, we need to use some physical terminology. Yad Hashem, Yamin Hashem, you know, and so on. On the other hand, none of it exists. So I have to play a double game. I need to be able to use the terminology correctly, and yet understand that none of this is literal in any sense of the word. He brought up a raya from what Shlomo Melech said in Shir Hashirim. The vash v'cholav tach z'shaynich. It says honey and milk will be under your tongue. He said the things that are pleasant, like honey and milk would be, you need to keep it under your tongue. You need not to move it forward. And that's why it's tachas l'shoynech. Chazal dashed like that. Kavshuhu tachas l'shoynech. Lefisha elu and yonim ein hem imashil alma v'yorisam yeshivas hachachma. This is not the type of thing you can teach publicly. Ale yirmesubem b'sfarim mazin star. In Sfarim will have some oblique references to it, and part of the filter which decides which people are shayach to or not is the ability to hear it, to relate to it. Valkein roy le isha chacham le galus in a seidois. Because galus yavim yiras beim dava, and right, and if they hint to somebody about something in Torah when they're teaching, yiras le misha shalom sichlav es amasim mumchiyosai, somebody that were clear that he has the understanding mind, meisha biru b'maisis rabbis v'talmud. Valkein. Ein royally isha chacham legalis masha yeda min asoidais el mushulamal menakamaisai. And that's why it's not appropriate that a person who's wise should reveal these sodos to someone who is who's inferior to him. As somebody that is lower, you don't know if the person will be able to handle it. Oy, lefishim yatzias of a sochel, em loyiganeo befonov, are a leitvo bane of dvarov. If he gives it to a fool, he's not going to understand it. He said, even if the person doesn't, if the person won't understand it, he will think it's rubbish and nonsense, and either he'll say that or just won't accept it from you. And the Rambam is saying basically, a person who doesn't appreciate and understand the chachma behind something, when you give him something that sounds absurd, discards it, and therefore, to give divrei chachma to somebody who's going to make light of it or discard it, that's not good. Ve'oid, he says, shalimud lahamoyni efter shil b'derech achida b'mashal, kidei sheyichlo anoshem anor batzirim, ad shakashe yishlumu scholim, yivodin yarisem esholim. When you're teaching a group of people, you must teach it in the form of a metaphor, because since you have people that are less than capable of understanding it, by giving them a metaphor, they will hold on to it until they're old enough to understand it, and then they'll understand it. So giving it over in a metaphor form, which is what he calls a riddle, is very, very important. In other words, it's going to come together. When the person is old enough to understand it, that's when he is old enough to make sense of it, and that's when he will do that. And that's exactly what Shlomo HaMelech meant when he said to understand. They wrote Mishlei to understand metaphors, the words of the Chachamim and their riddles. And that's why the Chachamim gave over the Chachma through all sorts of remazim and so on. I want to add something over here that I think is important. The word, there's a word about, there's a book about wisdom in Tanakh, and it's called Mishlei. And once again, the word Mishlei is translated in rather poorly as a parable of sorts, a parable, illustrations. So everybody's familiar with like the Mishalim of the Dibna Magid, and cute little stories, homiletics of sorts. It's something that's cute and sweet, but doesn't seem to us terribly, terribly intellectually challenging, and so on. A mashal was usually a folk's tool. The guy would say a speech, he would bring the parsha, he would ask a question, and then he would give a mashal. And the parable was always quite long. It was interesting and funny and so on, and at the end there would be a point driven in, where it was leading up to, and that point came from the parish or whatever it is. So he says like this. So why is it that Chachma, the safer dealing with Chachma, is called a mashal? So the answer is, every wisdom works as follows. I have phenomena that happen in the physical world, expressed through physical beings undergoing some change, and I have I have something else. In other words, the objects themselves are the shell. So for instance, when I throw a rock or I leave a rock go, it falls down to the floor. The rock and its falling embody gravity. So gravity is the idea that it's a concept that things pull at each other, and the rock is its illustration. It's true with psychology, it's true with every discipline. You have sort of laws that govern, and then you have all the specific cases. Our understanding usually comes from a specific case. Newton didn't start by dreaming a formula for gravity. He started by watching things fall, whether it was an apple, not an apple, it was a machlokes, but at the end of the day, it was the things, the actual things that fell, that provoked the understandings behind it. So the everything in the world is a muscle for something else. If I have a piece of iron in front of me, that iron has in itself characteristics of every iron in the world, and of the general class called iron, and those characteristics transcend any particular piece of metal. So the muscle is always the outer covering and manifestation of the thing I'm talking about. We need to grasp when I come along with a theory about gravity, of gravity, it's a very, very big difference if I just come with a set of equations. One of the reasons why theoretical math is so difficult for most people, because you're dealing in a world that doesn't exist and it can't translate itself. This equation means nothing. It means that as an equation, it's an equation. And I can play with it and it looks great and you can do all sorts of neat things with it, but nothing, it doesn't translate anything. So what is it? It's an equation. It's a description of something. On the other hand, when I'm studying real phenomena and I map it out, or I keep the data, and then I map out a new idea, it's much easier to grasp it because I've hopped it. This piece remains, that piece stays, this piece gets disconnected. So what happens over here? And let's understand it, and then we now fix it. So every muscle is... So when I give you a muscle for something, what I'm doing is I am taking a case that whose manifestation is familiar to you, and I show you where the principle lies, and now you can apply it to wherever you want to apply it. So muscle is not simply a cute way of, you know, like a little story to make the schmooze interesting, or to help the simple folks understand something because they're stupid, they don't understand anything. So having a muscle is a great understanding. A muscle is the ability to give something in a physical manifestation. I'm trying to tell you an idea. People don't grasp ideas as ideas. They're very difficult to grasp. But when I give it to you in one of its manifestations, I grasp it very quickly. And what I need to do is, I need to extract the content from the places it's manifesting itself. For instance, let's say I never ate honey in my life. And you're trying to convince me to eat honey. You tell me honey tastes great, and I say, I don't like it. I don't want it because I never tasted before. I don't know what it is. So you'll tell me, well, it's as sweet as sugar. So it's not sugar, but I have a flavor that you could feel in your tongue that I can now transmit to you, and you apply it to this bag. The application of the ability to use a mashal as the vehicle for the understanding is the heart of chachma. Every time I explain something, what I'm doing is transferring the information from one from one carrier to another carrier. I am the way I said it before, you don't understand, because the terms that I was describing it in are not familiar to you, let me describe it to you in other terms, and now it'll become understood for you. That's what a mashal is, and that's why a mashal is the heart of chachma, and so on. Ulefikach, he says, Royu ha'adam, im yavo liyado, midivrem, edin shachikeh asechel fi machshavtoi. So let's say a person knows a piece of Gadatan, and it sounds, wow, this is weird, this is strange. It's important, shlo yiyachis achison leisan dvorm. It's not the Agadat that's strange. He should say, wow, this Gemara is baffling. I can't make heads or tails of it. And when he sees something in Agadat that seems to be far-fetched, he needs to think about a seichel. So we need to look at God and say, you know, if I would get it, this thing would snap in. If I really understood what's right, that would be just a cinch. It looks to me puzzling and strange and crazy because I don't get it. Because there are different levels of seichel. Just like there are different levels in terms of midos, that different people have different inborn natures and we're understanding. Some people are shallow, some people are deep. Kenya seichel ish echad yoseshon v'yosem mali miseichel ish achar. So that way, the group of in any given group, you'll have different levels of ability to pick up on it. The ein safik ein seichel mishayada davar nichpad, k'seichel mishasocha is a davar. The mind of someone that understands something weighty is different than somebody who doesn't. So he says there's a tremendous difference in diagram between these two, because. You know, the different levels of understanding something really determines the different levels of the person. Because when we say a human being is an intelligent animal, like all the things we describe about the human being, we're talking about potential. And therefore, I might be, you know, every person has potential ability to understand, but if he has not yet, then he hasn't understood yet. Valken yesh devarim shem etz anoshim siyome betachas em zabir v'zacherim begera nimna lefi erech malzeh chachma. And that's why you have things, he says, and he points out, where some people feel that this thing is absolute truth, this idea, and some people feel it's off the wall, it's crazy. It's like some of the stuff that you have in modern physics. There will be scientists that will swear that this is true and so on. And then there'll be people, I'm talking about the modern science theories, quantum and stuff, relativity, that really is counterintuitive, and you'll have people that will say this is a crazy idea and it makes no sense whatsoever. So here you have a filter that you have two people, and both of them heard this. One of them says, wow, I need to think into it. And one person says, I need to reject it as, you know, as soon as I can. It's meaningless nonsense. So in Chazal, same thing. Chazal faced a conundrum when they made Agadata. They're talking about in Yonim that, generally speaking, need to be not easily accessible. It needs to be accessible only to the people who appreciate it. If you give it to people, if you give Kabbalah to people that don't understand it, don't have that sensitivity, they will say the most kafiritic of things, because the language of Kabbalah sounds like this body and this and that. So Chazal needed to hide it. And now it became automatically accessible just to someone who's shaykh to it. it became it's not, or I should say, it's not automatically accessible. It's only the type of person who has the deep mind to grasp. He looks at the Chazal and says, "Oh, wow! You know, I understand what Chazal is trying to say here." Okay, we'll hold it. I mean, he has a mushal here. It's a long mushal. I think it's a good place to hold it by. Any questions? Okay, so next week, what's the story? Are we on? It's some Gedalia. What's the story?